Does truth exist?
Because you have faith, does that make this book true?
Does God exist?
So when someone says there is no truth, if you apply the claim to itself, what should you say? Is that true?
They don't think Christianity's true.
They're talked out of it. You know why they're talked out of it? Because they've never been talked into it.
Cross-examining skeptical and atheistic views. Welcome to Cross-Examine with Dr. Frank Turek.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've noticed that there is a common theme running through many objections to Christianity. In fact, I think this common theme underlies the majority of objections to Christianity. A majority. In fact, I'm going to list a bunch of popular objections to Christianity right here, and I want to see if you can identify what is the common theme. So I'm going to list them here, and then you ask yourself, what's the common theme here in these objections? Here we go. Christians are intolerant hypocrites. Christianity is the religion of no, don't do this, don't do that. It's just absolutely no fun. Christianity and religion were created just to keep people in line. The church throughout history has done evil things. The church is evil. All they want is money. All they want to do is set up a theocracy. And by the way, what does God have against sex, particularly homosexuality? And if God is all good and he's all powerful, why do bad things happen to good people? The God of the Old Testament is evil. Killing the Canaanites? I mean, please. What's that all about? And what about slavery in the Old Testament? Doesn't appear this God is very moral. And by the way, evil disproves God. And if God is love, why would he ever send anyone to hell? And what about those who've never heard? Why would God create people he knew would go to hell? And by the way, if this whole hell thing is true, eternal punishment is just too much for temporal sins. Why would we punish somebody for eternity for something they did temporally? You ought not judge. And you Christians, you're all judgmental. You don't even believe what Jesus said. He said, don't judge, and here you are judging. Come on. And by the way, I'm a good person. I can make it to God on my own. You know what? You got to be true to yourself. You have to do what makes you happy. No one has the right to tell anyone else how to live, but you Christians, you want to tell people how to live. That's wrong. Now, what is the common theme running through all of these objections? Man, I didn't even ask for phone calls, and the lines are full. Yeah, we are live this morning, 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Hey, Joy, are these calls coming in to respond to the question, what's the common theme? If they are, let me know. Just put it up on the board, and I'll put the person on. If you know what the common theme is running through all these objections, then call us and tell us what the common theme is. What is it? This is a majority, I would say, of objections to Christianity. A majority. I mean, there are other objections, but these are the ones that appear to come up over and over and over again. Does anyone know what the common theme is? I don't know if I'm going to get any takers here. I'm waiting for the phones to, they're lighting up now. Joy, just indicate which line has an answer, and I'll put them on again. You church people, you're intolerant. You're no fun. You're just trying to keep people in line. The church throughout history has done evil things. All they want is money. Just trying to set up a theocracy. What does God have against homosexuality? If God is all powerful and all good, why do bad things happen to good people? The Old Testament God is evil. Evil disproves God. Why would God send anyone to hell? I thought he was love. What about those who've never heard? Why would God create people he knew would go to hell? Why do we have eternal punishment for temporal sins? You ought not judge, and you Christians are just judgmental. I'm a good person. I can make it to God on my own. You got to be true to yourself. No one has that right to tell anyone else how to live. Christians want to do that, so that's wrong. Common theme. Do I have any takers? Joy, give me a line here. Give me a line. Which one? What line? All right. Somebody from Michigan, I think, has it. It's Shan from Michigan. Shan, I think. Let me see if I can put you on. For some reason, I can't put you on. What's the problem here? Put Shan on from Michigan. Shan, can you hear me? Shan, you're on with Frank Turek. What's the common theme? I can't hear you. Well, we appear to be having trouble with the phones. Wouldn't that good? What's the common theme? Can someone put up Shan from Michigan? No, can't do it. All right, forget phones. We'll get to it later. The common theme running through all of this is that all of these are moral objections. They're moral objections. They're objections to how God, if he exists at all, deals with morality. He's an immoral being for doing all these things. And Christians are immoral too. Now, many of these moral objections on the surface appear to be external to the person objecting. In other words, they appear to be dispassionate, intellectual questions about the morality of God. But I submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, that quite often they are given to mask, not always, but quite often they're given to mask what is really a personal moral objection. It's not a dispassionate intellectual objection going, well, this can't be true because there's an inconsistency here. It's really more personal in nature. It's a personal moral objection. What I mean by that is the objector brings these objections up simply to mask the fact that he or she does not want to answer to any moral authority. You know the question that I always ask people. I've said on this show 1,000 times by now, and I told you 1,000,000 times, stop exaggerating. But anyway, I bring this question up. I typically ask this question to people who are not Christians, and it goes like this. If Christianity were true, would you become a Christian? If Christianity were true, would you become a Christian? In fact, in every audience I go to now, I ask this question of the people in the audience. I say, I want you to think of somebody who's not a Christian. You Christians in here, think of somebody who's not a Christian. Okay, you got that person? Good. Okay. Let me ask you a question about the person you're thinking of. And you in the audience right now can do this exercise yourself. The person you're thinking of right now, is that person on a relentless pursuit of truth? Or is that person apathetic or maybe even hostile to Christianity? Now, when I ask this of live audiences, maybe one, maybe two people raise their hand when I say, is the person on a relentless pursuit of truth? Everybody else raises their hand when I say they're apathetic or hostile. I mean, it's 99% to one, if that. The last audience, I had nobody raise their hand for on a relentless pursuit of truth. Because people often are not on a truth quest, they're on a happiness quest. And they're going to do whatever they think is going to make them happy. And they don't want Christianity to be true. They don't want there to be a God. They want to be God. And quite frequently, these objections to Christianity that they bring up that are moral in nature are masking the real issue. And that is, they don't want there to be a moral authority outside themselves. They want to decide right and wrong. And they want to live the way they want to live. They don't want anybody telling them who's right, who's wrong, and they don't want to feel like they have to adjust their lives in any way, and they think they're going to have to do that if Christianity's true. That's why Jesus said, you're going to have to take up your cross and follow me. Discipleship isn't cheap. It's free, but it ain't cheap. It's going to cost you personally. And people don't want to do that. They want to go their own way. And these objections are just that. They're objections related to what the person finds distasteful. I don't want to do what I think the Christian God wants me to do. I want to do my own thing. Now, that's not to say these objections I brought up aren't good intellectual objections that need to be answered. They are. They do need to be answered. I'm just saying that quite frequently they're used to mask the deeper personal moral objection. And in fact, when we come back from the break, maybe we'll deal with a few of these and we'll get to your phone calls if we can get the phones working. The phone number here is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. You're listening to Cross Examined with Frank Turek on the American Family Radio Network. Our website, crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with a D on the end of it, .org. I want to say I'll be in Dayton, Ohio this next weekend, the 20th and 21st. I'll tell you about the details after the break. If you're out there, I hope to see you. I'm back in just 2 minutes. Don't go away. service on Saturday night at 5, and then Q&A following the service. We'll be talking about I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. And then Sunday, two services Sunday morning. Hope to see you there. Go to our website, crossexamined.org, for more. Crossexamined with a D on the end of it.org. Today we're talking about the moral objections that people bring up against Christianity. And as I mentioned, I think really a majority of objections deal with moral issues. And here's the problem if you're an atheist. You have no standard by which to judge anything moral or immoral. It's just your personal opinion that whether you like something or not like something. It's just a matter of preference. It's more like you like chocolate, I like vanilla. If there is no objective standard of goodness outside of ourselves, which is what we mean by God, if that being doesn't exist, then there's nothing really wrong with hypocrisy, or there's nothing really wrong with evil, because there's no such thing as evil. Everything's just a matter of opinion. There's nothing really wrong with any of the objections you bring up against Christianity, whether it's the distaste for the restrictions that God apparently puts on sex. And by the way, those restrictions are for our own good, not for our detriment. Or you may not like eternal punishment, obviously, and you may say, well, that's wrong and that's immoral. That can't be wrong if there's no such thing as right. Something can't be not right unless something is right. Something can't be unjust unless something is just. Something can't be immoral unless something is moral. And something can't be moral unless there's a category out there known as morality, which is immaterial and is ontologically, meaning this thing really exists. There's this thing out there known as goodness and righteousness that really exists. Justice really exists. That doesn't exist on an atheistic worldview. In fact, Richard Dawkins, let me quote him. He's right about this if his worldview is true. Here's what he said, eloquently, I might add. He says, in a universe of blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt and other people are going to get lucky, and you won't find any rhyme or reason to it, nor any justice. The universe we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is at the bottom no design, no purpose, no evil, and no good. Nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music, unquote. That's Richard Dawkins. He's absolutely right if his worldview is true, if atheism is true and there is no God. Notice he says there's no justice, there's no evil, there's no good. He's right about that. If we're just molecular machines, moist robots, if there is no ontological status to this thing we call good, there's no goodness. Everything's just a matter of opinion. Now, of course, Dr. Dawkins doesn't actually believe or doesn't live like he actually believes that. A couple of years ago, he affirmed that a woman has the right to an abortion. In fact, she said it would be immoral to give birth to a, that's what he said, it would be immoral to give birth to a baby with Down syndrome. That would be immoral. Well, according to Dawkins, the right to choose is a good thing, and giving birth to a Down syndrome child is a bad thing. Likewise, he said in another context that secular education is a good thing and religious education is a bad thing. In fact, Dawkins, I think, referred to religious education as child abuse. Well, wait. If there's no good or there's no evil, if there's no justice or no injustice, if there's no purpose or no design, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference, how can you call anything a right or anything a wrong? How can you call something moral, like aborting a Down syndrome child, or something immoral like giving birth to a Down syndrome child? By the way, Dawkins rightfully took a lot of heat for saying that. But again, his own worldview doesn't afford him an objective sense of right or wrong. Not even objective sense, the objective reality of right. You can have an objective sense of it. You can sense there's a good and a bad out there. But if God doesn't exist, it really doesn't exist, this good or this badness. Of course, badness doesn't exist on its own. It only exists as a privation in good. That's why evil can't disprove God, because evil actually presupposes good exists. Evil is a privation in good or a lack in good. Evil doesn't exist on its own. That's why there can't be just a God that's pure evil, because pure evil doesn't exist. It only exists in a good thing. Evil is like, it's like rust in a car. If you take all the rust out of the car, you got a better car. If you take all the car out of the rust, you got nothing. It doesn't exist on its own. So what I'm trying to say here, maybe in an inarticulate way, is that atheists are stealing from God to argue against him. That's obviously the subject of my book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. They're saying certain things are immoral, like giving birth to a Down syndrome baby, or being a hypocrite, or prohibiting homosexuality or abortion, or taking money from people, or whatever their objection is. They're claiming those things are immoral, but they can't be immoral unless there's a standard of morality, unless there's a standard of good. And their standard of good doesn't exist if we're just in a materialistic world. They have to steal good from God in order to argue against him. So they're stealing from God to argue against him. And I find that this moral objection really underlies much or many, a majority of the objections you get with Christianity. In fact, on our app, the Cross Examined app, if you haven't downloaded it, you need to download it. Two words in the App Store, Cross Examined. It not only has this podcast on it, it has our TV show streaming live. By the way, the TV show is on Wednesday nights on DirecTV at 9 p.m. Eastern and 1 a.m. Eastern if you're an insomniac. And that particular program on Wednesday nights is also on Roku, NRBTV. If you don't have DirecTV, it's on Roku, NRBTV. And if you don't have DirecTV and you don't have Roku, there's this brand new thing that may have gotten to your area recently. It's called the Internet. Yeah, it's on the Internet at our website, crossexamined.org. You can see the show streaming live. Anyway, on the app, we've got the podcast, we've got the TV show, we've also got a quick answer section. And in the quick answer section, which helps you on the fly respond to objections that your friends may have to Christianity, there's something we call the four E's. The four E's. What are the four E's? These are the objections that you'll get, or categories of objections that you will get if you try and say that Christianity is true. They all begin with the letter E. The objection that you'll get with regard to evolution is one of them. The other, evil. A third one is ethics, and a fourth one is eternity. So evolution, evil, ethics, and eternity. Those are the four categories I've noticed that most of the objections you get to Christianity fall under. Now, three of these, evil, ethics, and eternity, all deal with morality. Those categories. You know, if there's a good God, why is there evil? Ethics, why did God kill the Canaanites? Or what about slavery? Does the Bible condone it? Those are moral questions. And then the issue of eternity. Like, what about those who've never heard? That's actually a moral objection, because it's implying that if people who have never heard about Jesus go to hell automatically, that somehow is immoral. You see, this is a moral objection. We've talked about it on this program before. It's answered in the app. So download the app. If you don't have the app, many of the objections that I've already mentioned here on the program, you can get quick answers to right there on the app. Again, two words in the App Store, Cross-Examined. As I mentioned in the book, Stealing from God, and if you're hanging on the phones, hang on. We're going to get to you right after the break. 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. These objections that many of them I've mentioned and are on the app, we also deal with in the book, Stealing from God. And I remember a friend of mine here in Charlotte. He's the pastor of a major church here in Charlotte, North Carolina. A few years back, he was preaching a series as to why the new atheists were wrong and why Christianity was true. And a young man came up to him, and I put this story in the book, Stealing from God. This young man came up to him and said, "You know, I used to be a Christian, but you know, I'm an agnostic now. And you know, what you're doing today, you should not be doing." And my friend David said, what do you mean I shouldn't be doing it? I'm just preaching the truth here. And he goes, no, you shouldn't be telling the atheists why they're wrong. That's unloving. Jesus wouldn't do that. And David said, no, Jesus would do that. He told a lot of people that they were wrong. And it's unloving not to tell people the truth. He said that you have to have a balance between grace and truth. You have to show people grace, but you also have to tell them the truth. If you have grace and no truth, then you have a waterly, borderless mess. If you have truth and no grace, then it's too harsh for people. You have to have a nice combination of both. And anyway, then this young man, who may have been about 20 years old, began to throw objections at this pastor friend of mine, David. And David would begin to answer the objection. And before he had finished answering the objection, the kid was on to the next objection. He would go, well, yeah, well, what about this? And then David would begin to answer that. And then before David's done, the kid would again go, oh, yeah, but what about this? You know the kind of people I'm talking about. They keep moving the goalposts. They don't even appear to be interested in the answer. They just have one objection after another objection. They're not open. So at one point, after about three or four times of being interrupted before he's done answering the young man's objection, David finally stopped and said, you know, really doesn't sound like you're interested in getting any answers to these objections. In fact, I think that you're doing what you're doing now, that you're saying you're an agnostic now. I think you're doing all this because you're sleeping with your girlfriend. Am I right? And the kid just froze because that really was the reason. He was coming up with supposed, apparent intellectual objections to mask what really was a personal moral objection. That he didn't want to live under any sort of moral authority that would prevent him from doing what he wanted to do. Now, I'm not saying, again, this is true of all atheists. Don't get me wrong. But I found it to be quite prevalent. And not just among atheists, but just among people in general. Even myself. Look, I don't want there to be a moral authority outside of myself either. Do you? I mean, this is why Paul says in Romans chapter 1, we suppress the truth and unrighteousness because we want to go our own way. Yes, people who are not Christians suppress the truth. But I submit to you, friends, that we do too sometimes. If you're a Christian, you suppress the truth. You might be suppressing it right now. You're not living completely consistently with what you believe either. And you're telling yourself lies so you can continue to do what you think you want yourself to do. This is the human condition. Yes, we're truth seekers, but we're also truth suppressors. And that's our problem. We're bent toward evil. Paul even talks about this in Romans 7. He's already a Christian and he's struggling. What I do, I don't want to do. What I don't want to do, I do. We all have the problem. And the first step toward recovery is admitting we got a problem. And morality is at the core of it. We want to do what we want to do, and we don't want anybody else telling us otherwise. All right, we'll get to your phone calls after the break. 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. You're listening to Cross Examine with Frank Turk on the American Family Radio Network. By the way, on iTunes, like this broadcast, will you? Like our page, put a nice review up there. All right, we'll see you in just a few minutes. Don't go away. If you're low on the FM dial looking for National Public Radio, go no further. We're actually going to tell you the truth here. That's our intent anyway. You're listening to Cross Examine with Frank Turek on the American Family Radio Network. Our website, crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with a D on the end of it, .org. By the way, got a new look to the website. Lots of new features. Check it out there. Also want to mention about CIA, the Cross Examine Instructor Academy, this year. It is in Dallas, Texas, just outside of Dallas, on August 10th through the 12th. This is where you can go to learn from some of the best apologists in the world. Joining the team this year, same team as last year, we'll have Greg Kokel, we'll have Jay Warner Wallace, we'll have Sean McDowell, we'll have Brett Kunkel, we'll have Richard Howe, Jorge Gil Calderon, I'll be there, we'll have several others. This is a place, Bobby Conway, the one-minute apologist, this is a place where you can go to actually learn how to better present the evidence for Christianity and answer questions. And so we'll not only present to you, you'll present to us a small group, usually around 50 to 60 people. You'll interact with all these folks for three full days. It's not cheap. It's not free, but it's well worth it. In fact, we have people that come back routinely. Some people have been to it four and five times. This is our 10th annual. This year, it's in Dallas, Texas, August 10th to the 12th. You better sign up soon, because once we run out of room, it's over, folks. So the Cross Examine Instructor Academy, CIA, go to crossexamine.org, click on events, look for CIA. You'll see the application process there. All right, so let's go to the phones, and I know folks have been waiting a while. We've been actually talking about a common theme running through a majority of objections to Christianity. The common theme is morality, that people have moral objections to what they perceive Christian people are doing or the church is doing or the Bible teaches, or more often it's just that they don't want to live according to what they believe the Bible is teaching, and so they reject it. And it's nothing to do with whether or not it's true or false. It's just that they don't want it to be true, so they reject it. Let me start with Sean in Michigan. Sean, hopefully we got you on the phone this time. Sean, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Sean, go ahead, sir.
All right. My question is, so Christians today, should we follow the Levitical law about, you know, unclean meats and clean meats?
All right, excellent question. The answer is no, because all that was done away with by Jesus, actually, in Mark chapter 7, when he said it's not what goes into a man that makes him unclean, it's what comes out of a man that makes him unclean. Jesus fulfilled all the dietary laws, which in the Old Testament were just there to show that Israel had to remain separate from other people, remain holy. Holy means to be separate from, because God was bringing his promised Messiah through the promised people in the promised land to save the entire world. And so there were these restrictions in the Old Testament that had to do with just Israel. In fact, and this is something, it's a very astute question, Sean, because I think a lot of Christians misunderstand the nature of the Bible on us. And the question is the Bible prescriptive on us today? And let me say that some of it is, but not all of it. All of the Bible is instructive, but only some of the Bible is prescriptive. The rest of it is descriptive. The Old Testament describes how Jesus or how God dealt with Israel. Remember, the Old Testament is God's covenant with Israel. The New Testament is God's covenant with the world, with us. And so there are many laws in the Old Testament that deal predominantly with Israel. There are moral laws like the Ten Commandments. Then there are civil or judicial laws, you know, the if-then laws. You know, if your donkey kicks another man, I'm just making stuff up now, but these are the kind of laws in Leviticus. If your donkey kicks another man, you have to pay him such and such. These are if-then laws. And then there are ceremonial laws that deal with food, what you mentioned, or clothing, or circumcision, and those things. Those are all laws that deal with the nation of Israel. But Christianity is not a nation. Those laws, if they're not repeated in the New Testament, are not binding on Christians today. And so that's kind of the short answer to a long question. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. All right. Let me move on to, let's see, who's been waiting the longest? I think probably Dylan in Virginia has been waiting the longest. So, Dylan, we'll go to you. How you doing?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you doing?
Excellent, but I'll get better. What's going on?
All right, sir. So it's been a while since I've been in Bible study class, but I believe in Matthew chapter 7, it says that the road to destruction is wide and many will pass through it. Mm-hmm. And then in the next verse, it says, but the gate or the road to salvation or the road to heaven is narrow and few will find it. So it's insinuating that more people will go to hell than will go to heaven for the obvious reasons, because men are immoral and want to follow their own stance with them through life. So if that is the case, and I've heard you make the case before that the universe, that before the universe came to cause and or the effect of the universe came into being, that God and his communion with Jesus and the Holy Spirit pretty much planned out the universe, knowing that all of our lives and the progression of it, knowing which one of us would go to hell and which one would go to heaven. Mm-hmm. So how can you just not you in particular, just for Christians in general, how can you justify the mindset that was going through, saying that I know a majority, let's say 70% mm-hmm. of people are going to go to hell, but the 30 with me is going to be worth this creation or worth the free will?
Okay, yeah, excellent question. In fact, again, this is a moral objection. Notice it's a way of saying that it appears, if this reading is correct, it appears that God is immoral because it appears that more people go to hell than go to heaven. And so this is somehow immoral. And I think the answer to it is that people freely decide where they're going to go. God knows what they're going to do before he creates the universe, but they freely decide where they're going to go. And the question is God under obligation to create a universe where more people go to heaven than hell? And the answer might be that God, even though he's all-powerful, can't do a contradiction. What's a contradiction? He can't force people to love him. That would be a contradiction. In fact, love by definition must be freely given. And it could be that God has created this universe where the maximum number of possible people are saved and the minimum number of possible people are lost while maintaining free will. Now, since we're not God and we don't know all of the contingencies here, we just have to trust and say that God has created this universe, which would bring forth the maximum number of people. Again, remember, he can't force people to love him. He can't force people to be saved, but he brings forth the maximum number, allowing for free will. And this is it. Now, we don't know what these percentages are. We don't know if it's 70-30. We don't know. What we do know is that God is just, and that people who truly seek him will be saved, and people who don't want him will be separated from him. And that's what God does. He separates himself from people, because that's what people ultimately want. They don't want God, so he allows them to go their own way. Does that make sense?
Excellent. Absolutely, Mr. Turk. I appreciate that. You put it beautifully.
All right. God bless. Thanks, Dylan. Thanks for the call. Let me move on now to, Reggie in Florida. Reggie, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead, sir.
Hey, Frank. Enjoying the show and enjoyed the, I went through the Bible study. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist.
Oh, excellent.
And so I thought I'd try, I was talking to a friend of mine, and I'm in real estate, and we were talking about, I said, I don't understand how anybody could not believe. And so this younger realtor came up to me, who says, well, I don't believe. And I used to believe, and my parents brought me up to believe. And I don't know how he lost his faith.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so I invited him over, and we were watching one of your videos, and he said, well, if the Bible is true and without error, how does, and you had touched on this earlier, what happens to all those people that, if Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, no one comes to the Father except through me, then all of those people go to hell.
And who? You mean all the people before? All the people before Jesus? Is that okay? Again,
right.
Good question. And again, it's a moral objection. Notice it's a moral problem here that Christians apparently have to deal with. And I think the true answer to it is it says that Abraham was justified by faith. Paul talks about this. Even Moses talks about this, that he's justified by faith, by trusting in Christ. Now, people in the Old Testament were looking forward to a Savior that hadn't come yet, but the sacrifice still covered their sins, even though they didn't know the name of the person sacrificed. So people in the Old Testament were saved just like they are in the New Testament. They're saved by putting their trust in Yahweh at the time, not knowing who the ultimate Savior would be. They were looking forward to salvation, just like we are looking backwards toward what Christ had done on the cross. In fact, Christopher Hitchens, the famous atheist whom I debated a couple of times, and by the way, the debates are free on our website, crossexamined.org, if you want to see them. Christopher Hitchens brought this up in one of our debates. He said, well, what about those that have never heard, before Jesus? And I said that it's retroactive, just like it's retroactive that it could be that the fall affected the world before the fall actually occurred. The salvation of Jesus affected the world, or I should say the sacrifice of Jesus affected the world before the sacrifice took place chronologically. So they were saved just like we're saved. They just don't have the same content knowledge that we have. Does that make sense?
Well, that makes sense. But his next question would be, and he's one of these, I'm also reading Kochel's book on tactics.
Excellent
and,
book. Part of CIA curriculum, by the way, tactics. Yep.
And he is a what's he called? Bulldozer, I think.
Oh yeah, he's a steamroller.
Steamroller, yeah. And
I
anyway,
hate to be a steamroller, Reggie, but I'm running out of time, so spit it out.
Quick question: if you're not Jewish, because the Jews were the ones that were doing the sacrifice? What happened to all those people?
There's a priest in the Old Testament called Melchizedek, the priest of Jerusalem or Salem. He may have been speaking to the rest of the world. We don't know. We don't know. We do know that God is just and that people are going to go where it is just for them to go. God is never going to be accused of injustice because he's the standard of justice. We might not have it all figured out on this side of eternity, but God is ultimately going to be just. We know that. Thanks for the call, Richard. 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. I'm Frank Turek. CrossExamine.org. Back in two. Welcome back to Cross Examined with Frank Turek and the American Family Radio Network. Check out our website, crossexamined.org. Like us on iTunes, the podcast. Also, download our app, Cross Examined, two words in the app store. Cross Examined has a quick answer section. Many of the questions being asked today are on the quick answer section. And you can get answers there. And sometimes they're linked to longer articles on the web, so check that out. All right, let me go back to the phone lines. People have been waiting a long time, like David in Tennessee. David, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead, sir.
Hi, Frank. I had a question for you about the language that Christians use when describing, like, permission of evil. And so if I was to, like, if someone was giving me the option, like, if someone was, like, holding a gun to someone's head and I said, hey, I'm going to permit you to do that evil, would I not be held liable for that?
Well, according to James, if you can stop it, if you know that something's evil and you can stop it and you fail to act, yeah, that would be evil. That'd be an act of omission rather than commission.
Okay, so how does that not apply to God?
Unpack that for me. What do you mean?
So if God could stop an evil, but he permits it to happen, how is that not a sin of omission?
Well, because God might have a greater good for that evil. He knows the end from the beginning. We don't. I mean, if we see an evil about to occur and we can stop it, we're obligated to stop it. But God can allow evil to occur because he allows free will, and he can bring good from evil. In fact, he promises he'll bring good from evil. We may never see the good that comes from it, but it can occur, and according to God, will occur to people that are called and who do love God, according to Romans 8:28. So God can bring good from evil. Now, sometimes we do see it. We even see it, say, in there's a scriptural story. As you know, Joseph from the Old Testament, not Joseph in the New Testament, but the Old Testament, Joseph is sold into slavery by his brothers, and he makes his way to Egypt and gains prominence in Egypt. And he actually is in a position to help his family when they flee from Israel to escape a famine. They come to Joseph, and Joseph is in a position to help them. Now, Joseph could have retaliated against him, but he didn't. And he said this in Genesis chapter 50. He said, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good, the saving of many lives. So the evil that occurred to Joseph actually rippled forward into the future and actually resulted in good, the saving of many lives. Now, again, we don't always see that, but I think you can see probably if you look back in your own life, there have been instances where bad things have happened to you, which ultimately turned out for good. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so God knows the end from the beginning. We don't. We're obligated to stop evil. God isn't. Because if he did stop evil every time it was about to occur, none of us would have free will. Right? We wouldn't be able to do anything. In fact, when people always say, why doesn't God stop all the evil in the world? I normally respond by saying, well, if he did, he might start with you. Right? He might start with me. Because we do evil every day.
Yeah.
Anyway, great question, David. I got to keep moving. Let me go to Melody, the great Melody in Texas. Melody, thanks for sending me those articles. I just got them
the
other day.
Thank you, Dr. Frank. Listen up. This last election cycle, Paul Begala, one of Hillary Clinton's cronies, announced on TV that Christians don't even believe in electromagnetic.
Don't believe in what?
Begala doesn't know. Electromagnetism.
What? It's one of the four fundamental forces of nature. You have Begala call me, and I'll affirm that I believe in it.
Well, hold on here. What he doesn't, what he didn't get is that James Clerk Maxwell was a believer.
Uh-huh.
Now, all of these snowflakes that you run into on these college campuses,
yes.
Don't you know that apparently with the loads of terribly large amounts of self-esteem, because they're the ones that have evolved into they're the ones that they've waited for all these years.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Do you think, there you go. Do you think that Mr. Begala or Hillary Clinton, either one, know for a fact that Francis Crick, the co-discoverer of DNA, and Dr. E.O. Wilson, the head of the biology department at Harvard, both believe in panspermia? That is, that aliens, and they're not explaining where the aliens came from, but they spread spores, and that's how human beings got there. The left doesn't want to be backward and ignorant, and now we're becoming dangerous to society. They don't even want to investigate their own basis for their own claims.
Well, yeah, Francis Crick, who co-discovered DNA, believed in panspermia as well, which means seeds everywhere, that aliens brought life here. And believe it or not, Richard Dawkins actually suggested that in the movie Expelled, when Ben Stein asked him at the end of the movie, where did life come from? And Dawkins said, well, it could have been brought here by aliens. And at that point, Ben Stein said, I don't believe it. Dr. Dawkins believes in intelligent design, because an alien's an intelligent designer. And actually, Melody, this gets right to the point that we've been talking about all day, because why would Dawkins be open to a alien who brings life here, and an alien's an intelligent designer, but not God who brings life here? And I submit to you, I don't know this for a fact, but it would seem to me the reason he's open to an alien but not God is because an alien doesn't bring morality with him, but God does. Again, it gets down to a moral issue. People don't want God because God brings morality with him. I mean, think about it this way, friends. Think about it this way. Would the mention of God in the public square be any problem if God didn't also bring morality with him? If people just wanted to believe in, say, a deistic God, a God who created the world and sustains it but doesn't get involved and doesn't care what you do, would anybody have any objection to that type of God? No, in fact, many of the major atheists say, you know, you could make a good case for that kind of God. Richard Dawkins has said so himself. So has Lawrence Krauss. In fact, I document that in the book Stealing from God. Lawrence Krauss, the atheist who wrote the book A Universe from Nothing, which actually isn't nothing, it's actually something. Anyway, I critiqued his view in the book Stealing from God. They both said, you know, one could make a good case that there's kind of a deistic God out there. But deistic God is non-threatening because he makes no moral demands on you, and there's no such thing as heaven or hell with this deistic God. A creator sustainer's fine. Just don't bring morality to the table. Then we get uncomfortable. See, that's really the issue quite frequently. All right, let me go to Keegan in Michigan. Keegan, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead.
Morning, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Hey,
go ahead.
So last week in youth group, I'm a youth leader there, we were talking about what your purpose in life is, and we just got down to the fact that, you know, your purpose in life is to serve God and show his love to others through your actions. And somebody brought up the question, well, what about the people who don't believe in God? What is their purpose? Mm-hmm. And we kind of talked about it for a little bit and just came to the point of, well, they have the same purpose that we do. They just choose not to fulfill it with their lives. They just make that decision. And
sure.
So I was just kind of wondering what your take is on that, how you feel about that, and just kind of what your thoughts are, sir.
Well, the purpose is to know God and to make him known. In fact, Jesus even says this in John 17:3. He says, this is eternal life, that they may know you. He's talking to God, the Father. They may know you, God the Father, and Jesus Christ, whom you've sent. In other words, eternal life is not just quantity. It's not just endless time or eternity. It's a quality, to know God for who he is. That's what the purpose of life is, to know God. Now, some people don't want to know God. They want to go their own way. So God ultimately will separate himself from them. But even atheists can get God's will done here on earth. If God does exist, and he does, then he can even use atheists to get his will done on earth. In fact, atheists are helpful to me because atheists help sharpen my belief in God. I wouldn't even investigate some of the questions they bring up because I haven't even thought of them. And I don't have that same issue with God or Christianity, but they do. So when they bring them up, then I and other Christians are sharpened by what they say. And some, you know, many atheists are great people from a from a just a general society perspective. They can be good citizens and they can be great neighbors and all this. So God can still get his will done even through people who don't follow him. So they still have a purpose, even if they choose not to follow the objective purpose. God can still get his will done through them. Thanks for the call, Keegan. Good call. Got to move on to squeeze in a couple more. Andre in California. Andre, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead. We just got a couple minutes, so we're going to have to be quick.
Andre, all right, I had a question about hello?
Yes, go ahead, Andre.
I had a question. I went a few days ago. I went preaching on the streets with my friend, and we came across some lesbians or homosexual people, and they said that their pastor was they're gay, and they said they was okay with it, and they had no problem with it. So my question is, can you be engaged in homosexual behavior and be a Christian at the same time, let alone and be a pastor?
Well, actually, Christians can still do evil and still be Christians and still be pastors because we all do evil. The question is, do they think that the sin that the scriptures say is a sin is a sin? If they say it is and they're struggling with it, that's one thing. If they say it's not a sin, then according to the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 5, he says, expel the immoral brother. No. If you're trying to say that something that's known sin isn't sin, then you're going to be excommunicated from the church for your own good. So hopefully you'll see the error of your ways and come back to God. But no, we can't take known sin and say it isn't sin. We can all say we struggle with sin and we're fighting sin. All of us, every pastor, every Christian is doing that. But to say that known sin isn't sin and that we ought to condone it and celebrate it, that would be what we would call apostasy. That would be somebody who needs to be expelled from the church and for their own good. Now, look, if there is no God, there's no purpose to life, which means there's no right or wrong. There's nothing right or wrong with anything. Homosexuality, heterosexuality. Only if God exists are certain things right and other things wrong. Only if there's an objective purpose to life is there a right way to live it, in other words. And so when people ask me questions about these issues, I say, my opinion doesn't matter because I'm not the author of life. The only truth that matters is what God has set up. And according to God and his design, there are certain behaviors that take you in the right direction and other behaviors that take you in the wrong direction. And so the answer to the question is God is the source. God's nature is the source of rightness, and any deviation from that rightness is wrong. And for us to say that now we're going to go against God's nature is not to follow God, but to not follow God, but to go in an opposite way. And no, I don't think that person can be a pastor. Thanks for the call, Andre. They shouldn't be a pastor, at least according to the scriptures. Again, they can struggle with sin just like the rest of us. But that doesn't mean that they should be in a position of leadership or even be in the church if they're going to say that something that really is sin. 1 Corinthians 5 and Matthew 18. Well, you need to know about that. All right, friends. Frank Turek, great being with you. Next week, the voice of God has